Yeah, so I didn't get any specific question, but I kind of felt like we are in the ballpark in what looking at, trying to understand.
Okay. Anybody else?
This is Jennifer. I'll go ahead. The articles that I chose, I was trying to get a little bit at the history of the hypothesis test and significance testing, and I came on to the teaching statistics from a math perspective. So I really wanted to see where was the background of the hypothesis test. So I read the Cohen article. I took a psychology graduate course in the spring, and Cohen was a big name in that, and I wanted to see from the psychology perspective, you know, what basically what were the null hypothesis statistical testing. It was a big controversy over those tests. And as I put down the key points, I saw the common theme that there's widespread misinterpretation in a lot of the journal articles. The statistical software is out there, so more and more people are using the statistics, but how they're interpreting it is incorrect. So for me, I thought in our classrooms we really needed to, number one, look at how the students are understanding that, looking at the logic. And also, as I noticed in a couple of Georgette's articles as well, they mentioned the same. They talk about Bayes' theorem quite a bit as well. So really I was looking at that concept in both the Cohen article, and also I looked at an article from the Annals of Internal Medicine, which I thought was very good. It was called Toward Evidence-Based Medical Statistics, and it really gave a nice background of Tukey and Naiman and Pearson and Bayes and Fisher, and it was a neat historical background for me. Most of it I already knew, but it was nice to see it all together in one spot. And then the other one that I read was p-values are random variables, and that was from the American Statistician. I was a little disappointed with that article because I thought there was going to be more to it. It was only a couple pages long, and I really felt like there could be more depth to it. It talked about using simulations and plotting histograms to teach students the logic behind rejecting the null hypothesis. And it had some neat ideas in it. I just wish it was fleshed out a little bit more, but I guess that might be our job. And they did use plots in the article based on our software.
This is Georgette. I read three articles, and I tried to find articles from different fields. So I found something from a medical journal and then something that talked about another article that talked about hypothesis testing in medicine, but also ecology and psychology, and then an article just on psychology. And so what I thought was interesting, they all came from different time periods as well, as they tended to agree on just that the null hypothesis testing is, and using a p-value, leads to very narrow interpretation, and that it seems to completely ignore the context, especially with the article on null hypothesis testing in medicine, that there's a lot more interesting things to be found from looking at a confidence interval. And so there were suggestions that including, you know, doing a p-value, but also showing a confidence interval and graphs and just looking at, you know, providing everything to the reader so that, you know, they can draw some conclusions as well. And I thought it was also interesting that there was a study in Germany that was testing people's understanding of there were six statements that were all incorrect, and even the instructors and the scientists were drawing, selecting incorrect answers about what the conclusions were. So we definitely have a very fertile amount of stuff we can work with, which I think is great, you know. Just, Aisha's article, which I'm really interested to hear your feedback on. There was just so much there that we can play around with.
Well, the articles that I looked at, they were all dealing with this instrument that is being developed by Sharon. I think it said Lane Guitars, I'm guessing it said. And it's called The Reasoning About P-Values and Statistical Significance Scale. And she went through, you know, she said it's designed to support research and students' conceptual understanding and misunderstanding of statistical significance. And from what I understood, it includes items on the instrument includes items where students usually have difficulties in terms of, you know, confusing language and what do you think about p-values, that they should always be small and that sort of stuff. Now, I was able to email her, and she responded and let me know that I guess the instrument has not yet achieved the level of reliability or validity that is required. I'm not sure if Bob can help me here, but I guess there's a certain level of reliability and validity required from the instrument before it can be used. Is that right, Bob?
Yeah. There's some ballpark figures, and I think I'll have them correct from memory here. Mm-hmm. But for research purposes, you'd like the reliability, the Cronvax Alpha, to be 0.7 or higher.
Right.
If you're if you're doing some like testing where you're actually making decisions,
mm-hmm.
Some high stakes testing, then they want it to be 0.9 or higher.
Wow.
But you would like to see it at least be 0.7. Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you? I'm taking the notes, and I missed what you said needed to be 0.7 or higher.
For research purposes.
Uh huh.
For research purposes.
Yeah.
The reliability.
The reliability. Okay.
Cronvax Alpha needs to be 0.7 or higher. Yeah.
Okay.
So Aisha, she said that it wasn't ready because of reliability and validity issues.
Right. So she's continuing to make from what she told me, she's continuing to work on it and improve it by, you know, changing the types of questions or, adding or subtracting different types of questions. She explains her process a little bit in the paper, but I think it's more technical than it sounds in the paper. She was pulling in questions from other sources. Like she talked about the artist TOS test of significance scale. So it appears that there are lots of other scales out there that would have questions that we may not, depending on what we're interested in, we may be able to use one of these well developed scales, is what I'm saying. What I really liked about what Sharon's test was doing was the fact that it had not just, you know, looking to see whether or not the students, she divided it in terms of the correct conceptions and misconceptions. Do you know what I mean? Instead of just focusing on the correctness or just focusing on misconceptions. And she had different content areas, so like basic literacy, relationship, logic of inference, belief in truth or falsity of hypothesis. So I think that there is a lot of value in this instrument or a similar instrument. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm curious as to how you found that article. Was that something that you did a search for instruments for statistical education?
I did a search for p-value scale, I think is what it was, or either p-value scales or p-value instrument.
Okay.
I think it was p-value scales.
Okay.
And then also, so Sharon was one of our graduate students,
mm-hmm.
and Joan and I co-advised her.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere on my shelf in my office, I have her thesis, and she looked at the artist test of significance scale, there was like 12 or 15 different research articles that on students' understanding or people's misunderstandings or understandings of null hypothesis testing, p-values, things related to hypothesis testing.
Mm-hmm.
She surveyed and she based her items on either items that those researchers created or kind of what she got from what the misconceptions they were finding. Mm-hmm. She wrote an item on that. So I don't know what the reference lists are like for these two, because they're
not that, yeah.
But there'd be a lot of other articles that she's citing. If this is the direction you guys want to go, you might actually want to go look at some of these original articles that she's mm-hmm. basing the RPAS on. Yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
I mean, a lot of the articles that she cites are articles that we've either already read.
Okay.
Like the Benz v. Garfield article. There are articles on, I guess, instrument-specific, so like convergent and discriminant validity, validation. You know, there's a lot of your articles assessing students' understanding, conceptual understanding, and most of them I think we've read. But I don't have access to her dissertation, so perhaps in her dissertation there is more.
How about in the table one that you sent us,
uh-huh.
as the selected references?
Yes, and I looked at those. Mm-hmm.
You looked at those as well?
I did. Okay. Thank you. But again, it may be useful, as Bob suggested, for all of us to look at them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And even narrow down, perhaps. I mean, I'm looking at all the categories that she included in that table.
Mm-hmm. Well, I almost feel that I'm not even quite sure if, do we have a sense of what we're doing? I know we last time we talked not just about hypothesis testing, but we also talked about confidence intervals.
Mm-hmm.
So are we, you know, so overall inferences, are we looking at overall inference? Are we just looking at hypothesis testing specifically? Are we looking at the specific method of, the specific p-value method?
Well, after everything that I read, and
mm-hmm.
maybe Bob could address this also, because this comes from the psychology and the medical standpoint, they're really saying that the p-value is not the way to go, certainly not the only way to go, that the confidence interval is a better measure because it takes into effect, or a better reported as an effect size. Then, and the p-value is misinterpreted, it's misused, it's...
So are confidence intervals.
Okay.
I've got evidence for that, and so do some other people. Can I just jump in, Jennifer?
Yeah, please.
So let me say, I don't think you should throw out p-values, and that p-values and confidence intervals are give you different information.
Right.
So when you do a 95% confidence interval, you know what the 95% confidence interval is, but that's essentially the same thing as saying, I rejected the null at 0.05.
Right.
That's different than saying, I got a p-value and it's 0.0003. You would reject that at 0.05, plus that's really strong evidence against the null hypothesis. It's a really
mm-hmm.
small p-value.
What about the size?
Confidence interval gives you is kind of a proxy. It's a type of effect size measure.
Right.
It gives you a sense for how accurate or precise you can actually estimate the true population mean, if that's what you're modeling. So they give you different information. And then the last thing I want to say at this point is, George Cobb hasn't given up on p-values, for example. His randomization approaches and resampling approaches to doing hypothesis testing, you don't have to call them p-values, but it's very based on, let's look at a distribution then of all these random samples, and where does our observed value fall? Is it out in the tails? Is it extreme?
Mm-hmm.
Or does it look like it's kind of common or typical? Well, that's what's behind the idea of a p-value.
Sorry, that's my dog.
That's all right. I'm sorry my dog hasn't started barking yet.
Okay. So I don't know, Bob, but I'm just speaking for myself here.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like since this is my first experience of working with such a large group, that I feel like I wish that it was more, not so much directing but just a little more. I was wondering if you can help. For me, I would like if you could help us more to narrow down and focus on a question.
Okay.
But that's just me personally. I'm not sure how the other ladies feel. Because I just feel like we've been reading and reading and reading, and there's a lot, but I feel like at this point we need to stop and synthesize and say, okay, here are the possible topics. Which one are we going to go with? Do you guys feel like, the rest of you feel like that, or is it just me?
No, I feel that way. But I don't know. I mean, I'll go with whatever, you know.
I was thinking that we had kind of narrowed it down to hypothesis testing, and we were trying to figure out if we could narrow it down further from there. So I was feeling like we're making small steps towards a focus. And, you know, and after these readings and what we've talked about so far, I feel, and looking at the instrument that you have here, Aisha, I'm kind of looking at the part about misinterpretation of p-values and, looking at hypothesis testing as the area that we can focus on. And now I feel like we have more than one way to do it. I feel like we can do this quantitative kind of stuff, and we can still do the interviews that we wanted to do, so we can get into the heads of the students and see how they're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like we have an additional option, like a two-pronged approach, where we can ask them questions where we can hear their own thinking, and then where we can direct more their answers from the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do some fun things with it and do our own reliability for our sample that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at two thoughts, and one is how the students understand it, and the other is how would we teach it. And
what is it? What do you mean by it? What is
hypothesis testing, p-value. I think that's kind of the direction we had narrowed it to last time, because we were talking about p-values predominantly, but I think it's quite a bit different. Well, obviously it's different if we're looking at how we would teach something, whether it's through simulation, and we talked about that a little bit last time, versus are we looking at the student's understanding, which is more of the qualitative, the interviews.
Your two questions, I feel like the how would we teach it follows from the first one. We need to get a sense of, well, how do they understand it, so we can see, you know, where are the holes? How can we? What misconceptions do they have? What areas are they struggling with? So we can figure out, okay, so how do we teach it better to fill those holes?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think right now we talked about how we each taught inference. A couple conference calls ago, we talked about how we each taught that, and I think we are. Most of us are teaching, you know, the traditional,
right,
quote-unquote traditional way. I tend to use simulations a little bit more because we have the technology to do that. But if we are teaching similarly, how are students understanding it using that method of teaching versus are we going to introduce a different way to teach it and then see if students understand it better, you know, pre-post or
right,
one class one way, one class another way? I guess that's my question, is which route are we going to take? And it might be too early to decide that. I'm throwing that out there.
Right. I always kind of struggle with, doing as close to an experiment as possible. Because if I really believe that one way is better, I have a hard time not teaching the better way,
mm-hmm,
you know, so I can do a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I'm not sure how we...
I'm going to suggest that you not let that influence anything at this point.
Okay.
How you might go do a comparative study, because you may not even do a comparative study.
Right.
Yeah.
And I liked what I was hearing. I read through the notes from the last meeting. I didn't listen to the recording, but I read through the notes a couple times. I really liked where I... envisioned you guys were going, and it did seem like you were getting closer and closer. Andy was still saying, you got to narrow it some more. He and I might be a little different in our opinion on that. But I liked, Narazu, I think what you were saying, and other people were agreeing with, that understanding what students do or don't know or how they think about it would be what you need first,
right,
before you would design some type of instruction or intervention. Am I capturing that fairly well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So just a thought now. Sometimes I jump ahead and try to move people too soon. But so it's towards the end of the semester, and you who are teaching statistics, you might think that your students might understand something about p-values, for example, at this point, or
mm-hmm.
confidence intervals. But I kind of got a sense of leaning towards p-values from the group. So it might be interesting, you could do this in email exchange too, but commit yourself to say what you think students would be able to, how they would be able to think with p-values. Are you interested in how they would define a p-value? If you say, here's a situation, a study, statistics was this, and here's the p-value, interpret the p-value. What does it mean? What do you think students would give you as a response? And so those are just ideas. I'll throw it out. And so one thing that's not done often enough is, say, like Sharon Langataz's RPAS instrument.
Mm-hmm.
When she developed it, she wrote the items, and then she would have interviews with students and ask them what they thought the question was asking.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know that she ever, and I think she did do this a little bit too, then gave the instrument when she thought it was in a good form, and then selected students who responded in certain ways to interview to see if what she thought was the reason for the response really was the reason for the response.
Oh, I see.
And I think that's a very interesting approach, and not enough of that has been done with her instrument and probably just about any instrument that's out there. So I guess what I'm proposing, I guess, if it's not clear, is one thing you could do is get some items, you all give them to your students, and then see if you could get some students who would be willing to sit down and talk to you about their responses.
Mm-hmm.
You mean, would this be something that would be informal within the structure of the course so that we wouldn't have to bring an IRB, or is this something we would have to bring an IRB?
We have to bring an IRB anyway, right?
Well, I think if it's your students, and it's, I don't think you need an IRB.
If you're not going to report the results, if you're not
okay.
going to present them in any way, I think it still falls under the auspices of this was part of their learning, part of the class. I'm not, so I don't think you need IRB for that.
But if we are going to present the results, because, if this is, are you suggesting that we do this just in terms of finding the questions that we want to ask, or as a study in itself?
And modifying them, more of a pilot and more of kind of gathering and kind of still immersing yourself. I think, Aisha, you brought up that you've done a lot of reading as a group, and I think you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys have covered the terrain pretty well. There's always more to go find, I'm sure. But now maybe there's another type of, and that's kind of literature research you're doing. Now maybe there's another kind of research you might be moving towards, and that is these students, what do you really get? I'm surprised when I have one-on-one with students. It's a lot different than what I think they were learning from me.
mm-hmm.
So it might prompt some research question, and along the lines of what Jennifer was getting at with teaching, given what you're hearing from them for explanations or definitions or how they're reasoning, you might ask, well, how could we circumvent that or change their thinking, and that gets into some type of instructional approach.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good.
So that's a little bit of guidance for me.
And I think we're all teaching hypothesis testing right now. I'm not sure because of, that's so being on a different, I think you're in a quarterly system.
Hypothesis.
Yeah, because I am too, and maybe, we can just do this very informally, take notes but not maybe record it or anything like that. What do you guys think?
Sounds good.
Yeah, so I guess what we need to do is have sort of similar questions of what are we going to ask them in the interview.
And can we do that via email, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe
we could
kind
come
of
up
narrow.
With some questions and, you know, kind of, so we have some sort of similarity in how, what we're asking them. We might, each of us might have a little bit more following on what they say, but at least we'll have some common ground to start from.
I have a question about the level of the student.
Right.
I teach two different step courses. One is for liberal arts majors, and one is for math science majors. I don't think that, my first thought is it doesn't matter. I mean, how they perceive it is how they perceive it. Because some of the liberal arts majors could have been math majors, but they're not, you know. So I don't know if that makes a difference. Should we just stay with the liberal arts, or should we go into the math science?
Well, I have another question related in that I'm teaching a second statistics course this semester, and we pretty much start with analysis of variance. So in terms, I mean, they're bringing in whatever misconceptions they had of p-values from before, but not only that, because we're doing pretty much all we do in this class is hypothesis testing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to compare these students with another class where they only have 3 weeks of hypothesis testing,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I also teach a class in spring, Aisha, that is a second stats class for the math science majors. So I also do the ANOVA and the chi-squared and the multiple regression.
Uh-huh.
Let me interject that I've got a colleague at Duquesne University, Amy Phelps, and she's run by a manuscript by me to just for some feedback. And what it's about is she gave the chaos test to students in a first course, and then at the beginning of their second course, and at the end of their second course. And on average, there was about a 5 percentage point increase on the chaos test. But that still put the average around 55 or 56% correct. In other words, you're saying there were some gains, but it was just incredible how little it was. And I can't, and of course the chaos doesn't just cover p-values and confidence intervals. But I think that was one of the stubborn areas, their interpretation of p-values and confidence intervals.
Mm-hmm. On the chaos test and the artist test, can you, or as an instrument, can you itemize and just pick and choose, or do you have to use the whole test as an instrument?
If you use it online, you'd have to have them take the whole test.
Okay.
But what I've told other people is, what I've told other people is, but you could just say, only answer these items to the students. I think that's got some problems to it, but you could do that. But you can also, I'll share the chaos test if I haven't with you already, and you could just make your own paper and pencil test or deliver it however you wanted of the items you wanted to use.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be glad to bias you in any way you'd want. What we've got on there, though, what we got on the chaos test, and I apologize if I've already spoken about this another time, but
no.
I think it's a set of four items on p-value and a set of three or four items on confidence interval. And across the four items on p-values or three items on p-values, it's kind of like Sharon's. It presents a correct interpretation and a couple incorrects.
Mm-hmm.
And it just asks you to indicate for this situation which ones are true and which ones are false. And what is demonstrated to us how students who can answer, who pick the correct one, say that's true, can also harbor these misunderstandings because they say a couple of the other ones are also true.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see them as mutually exclusive at all. There's lots of students like that.
Yeah.
That would be great.
No, go ahead.
So I would really enjoy doing that. Talking about it instead of giving them another test or whatever, but just having them sit down and talk it through, you know, as they're going along. I think that we could get a lot of information from that.
I think the fact that we, you know, the classes that we teach may be a little bit different. We can just, that could actually be useful just to know, like in the case that Bob was talking about, that, well, there isn't much gain, or, you know, is there gain? So we can just describe who our students are and then see if any of those other characteristics might have an influence on how they perform. So it's going to be difficult for us to match exactly our classes. We could, you know, we could say we're going to do it in an introductory stats class, and you know, as we could go. It's going to be difficult for us to match them exactly. So we'll just go with what we have and describe who we have participating.
Okay. I have a limitation in that I have about two weeks of school left. So this was something we were planning to do for this semester. In my case, I would need us to move a little quickly to decide what we're going to ask and so forth.
Okay.
I don't know where everybody else is. So.
I've got the chaos test open. I'm going to put together a subset of items that I think are related to what you guys are talking about.
Okay.
And I'm going to send it to all of you. And that could be one starting point for you. Aisha, when you talked to Sharon, she hasn't published any of the items. She's published these tables of what they met, you know, what they refer to, but she hasn't published the items themselves, I don't think.
That's right. And she said there's no other research that is using the RPAS, so it sounds like she hasn't actually given it out.
Did you ask her if she'd be willing to share the items?
I did, and she said yes.
I'm just suggesting that might be another, you know, thing to do. See if you can get a hold of that and tell her you're only going to share it within your group.
Yeah.
And that I'm one of the people participating in your group, and but it's only going to be shared within your group, and that you'll keep her informed of anything you would plan to do with the items.
Because I actually have a link to some of the sample version. She's already sent me a link to that. But do you think I should get the most recent RPAS, or will the sample version?
Sample version's probably just fine.
Okay. Okay. And it's from fall 2009. So it is it's just a sample version of the most recent one.
Okay. By sample version, does she mean it's a sampling of the items, or?
I'm guessing that's what it is.
It's not all the items, it's just a subset of them.
I can ask her, but I think that's what it means.
Okay, because you might look at the, like that table one that you have there, and actually the other one, probably the better one's the second one.
Uh-huh.
And see if by looking at the list, so it says RPAS for correct conception and misconception, where she's got them kind of labeled that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the test has changed since that table, but just from those short little descriptions, are there certain items that you guys think, and you could do this by email, but are there certain items that you think are most relevant to what you guys are interested in and some that aren't? Like the last four, alternative true, alternative false, null is true, those I think are getting a type 1, type 2 error type of issues. It may not be, which may be of interest, but I don't think it's directly related to understanding p-value of some of the other items.
Okay.
So another piece of my guidance for you, I like what you guys are doing, where you're at. I think you're feeling like it'd be good to be moving forward and actually doing something along the lines of research. I think you're still in kind of the formulating and gathering information stage, which is exactly where you should be at. But it'd be good to dabble in and see what you can find out, and that's going to shape your thinking, and then you might go back to the drawing board, who knows, but I think that's exactly what you should be doing at this point.
Okay.
I'm going to jump in more. I'm jumping in more, I think, than usual here. This meeting that's going to come up, our conference call, we're going to ask a person from each group to give us a report on the group, what have you been up to? I think just like 4 or 5 minutes each, something like that. So you'll need to decide among you who's going to do that.
Okay.
And you don't have to decide that now. I'm just throwing that out. I'm sorry. You don't have to decide that now. I'm just throwing that out there. And you guys might want to email each other about what do you think are important things to tell the whole group about what your group's been doing.
Okay.
Those are just some suggestions.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead. I'll email Sharon to just find out if, you know, the sample version that she sent me, whether it's actually a sampling of the questions or if it's just the questions are still in process or the instrument itself, and, you know, see whether or not she'll be okay with us using some of the questions. And I want to see also if she has, I'm going to see if she has an updated blueprint, I suppose, for the ARPA.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bob is sending us the questions. And then once we get, Aisha, are you going to send us something from Sharon at that point?
Yeah. As soon as I hear back from her, I'll let you guys know.
Now, the questions from the chaos
test. And look at both the items that Bob sends us and the ones you, you know, from Sharon, and decide which items we want to use for our interviews. So we can get those out quickly so that can do it before break here.
Okay.
Well, that was going to be my question. Are we going to use those in our interview questions, or are we going to use those as an instrument post, after our initial interviews, or are we just using them as a guideline? Are we using the actual questions, or are we just using them as a guideline for our interviews?
I was thinking we'll probably use them as a guideline for the interviews.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
That's what I thought, too. So what else? Because
well,
I know Aisha has to go, right?
Yeah.
I've got to go, yeah.
So our next conference call will be January 29th for the group.
But we're going to be emailing back and forth.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And what are the roles for the next one? We're just shifting down?
Yeah.
So Jennifer is the moderator, Aisha synthesizer, Yadatso is recorder, Georgette is organizer?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, you guys, I think I'm going to head out because it's just about quarter of, and I've got to head over there. I will send email. I'll email as soon as I get something back, and I'll make sure to read the minutes so I know what next you guys spoke about.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Thank you.
All
right. Have a safe break, everyone.
You too.
Bye.
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 Okay.
Okay.
Do we have anything else?
So I guess the action items are getting those questions, those items, and then figuring out who's going to be our spokesperson and what we want included in the report to the whole group.
Okay.
As far as what we want the whole group to report, we might even be able to collectively, you know, just come up with key points and email that to each other and then just refine that. And whoever is our spokesperson would not have to come up with that all on their own. That would
be
four of us contributing to that. And as a, you know me, I like bulleted lists as an itemized list.
So basically we could have two streams of email going to each other. One is strictly on the interview questions, and then one on the report for December.
Right.
Okay.
Sounds great. Bob, I have a question about the JS. Okay, I'm going to mess this up. JSM meeting.
Sure.
In Vancouver. You mentioned, and I'm thinking that this is what we're going to speak about in December on the conference call too. But you mentioned that you were looking for people to present. Did you mean groups to present?
No. What we did last time, I think we're going to try to put together the same proposal. It was a panel, and it was a representative, one representative from each group.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to, it just happened to turn out it was the person for each group. It was the person who presented at the conference call in December, but it doesn't have to go that way. What we did last time is we had one of the RAB members, Sterling Hilton, gave an overview of the cluster mentoring model and what it was all about, and that was like 10 or 15 minutes. Actually, he didn't show up, and I gave it. he had a flight delay thing, and so we scrambled for that. Then each person, and then a representative from each group presented on where they were at, and it's basically – kind of the literature review, what you found from the literature, and where your current thinking is for a research question, or have you already gathered some information, what have you learned from it. So it's just kind of the current state. So you'll be a little further along come next August. And then one more person from the cluster participants kind of talked about what it meant to them, as to you guys as a group, this opportunity to work in a collaborative group and us connecting you together and whatever, kind of a, just what it did for you is for professional development in that. And so that person kind of solicited emails from all the group members, from all dozen, to give her some, you know, thoughts along that line. And then what we kind of asked was that people consider, if you need to make a presentation in order to get funding from your institution, you know, that the group kind of talk among themselves and that's one consideration for who might do the presentation.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that kind of address your question, Jennifer?
Yes, I was thinking exactly what you just said as far as a presentation being the funding.
Yeah. Now, another thing would be for us to think of it in terms of there being a bunch of co-authors. And so I don't know if your institutions would, if you're not the presenter but you're a co-author on something that's being presented, would that qualify you for funding?
Yeah, thank you.
Because obviously you'd all be making contributions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And could definitely make that claim.
That'd be helpful.
Yeah. But of course we can't have 12 people presenting in a session, so.
Yeah.
That's the only limit to it. Preclude somebody, you know, one of you presenting something else, submitting something else to present at JSM. And I know a couple people did that too. Did you understand the last thing I said? I'm not sure I said that clearly. Okay. And I think there's a early February due date for getting in proposals for contributed papers, so that's something else to think about. Anything else about the JSM?
If after we finish our group research through USCOTS and that, if we wanted to do more research through I don't have someone at my institution that I have like the research advisory board, like you guys.
Right.
I'm looking for additional research beyond that as well. I don't know if there are any, and this is kind of off the topic, but if there's any other avenues for grants, further educational opportunities through CauseWeb, through National Science Foundation, for someone like me that, or maybe even George S. and Krista too, interested in getting their PhD, and being in this, you know, this arena, of the stat ed arena.
Mm-hmm.
And doing future research, et cetera. I don't know if there's anything specific. I think that the research advisory board would be the go-to people to ask questions about that, but that's something that I've been meaning to ask you.
Well, the CAUSE right now isn't a granting agency. I mean, CAUSE goes out and gets competitive NSF grants to support things that they're doing. And then they support things like this research advisory board activity. My head's just flooded with a bunch of responses to your question, Jennifer. So let me see if I can sort them real quickly. I'm still in contact with the four people from the first cluster that I was involved in. They are still collaborating.
Okay.
I don't know that the funding will be there, but they still use the ReadyTalk conferencing. But I think sometimes they've also just done Skype. One of their members is in Monaco. So they're truly an international group. And I think the other two groups have still continued to work on their projects. You know, they've launched a project that wasn't done in 2 years. They got to some point in 2 years, but then there's more questions and they've continued on.
Mm-hmm.
So one answer to that is that, you know, it's likely that you'll continue on as a group after the 2 year kind of springboard here.
Okay.
I mean, it's for me, it's like having another set of graduate students. I don't mean that to be demeaning in any way, but I really feel, you know, I make a connection to the people that I work with. And so they're still asking me for advice. It's not as frequent, but because they're much more on their own. But I look over drafts of things and give whatever advice I can, you know, on things that they're doing. I would continue to do the same for you guys. And then I know one of the groups, I don't know what the outcome is, but I know they submitted an NSF grant to fund an instrument that they were developing. So there's all kinds of opportunities. I think IES grants, Institute of Education Sciences, Pew Foundation funds a lot of things with it. And it's a good area that we're in with statistics because it's still under STEM type research, and there's a lot of funding for educational research related to STEM, STEM majors and such.
Well, I'm seeing how long it takes to get through the process, and I'm thinking after 2 years, I think we are going to have more questions, and it would be great to continue on. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't know if that was feasible.
I think it's feasible, but I guess if you're hearing it, a lot of it's up to you guys.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you can still keep collaborating, and then technology will change by then, and it'll be probably cheaper and easier to do conference-type calls, and maybe our video technology will be improved and can actually, you know, look at each other while we're doing it. I mean, you can now, but it's usually so choppy, bandwidth affects the quality and stuff, but yeah.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome. Anything else, you guys?
Well, we don't have a moderator anymore, so who wants to step in?
I'll be the proxy moderator, maybe, or whatever. But it sounds like you guys kind of came to, you know, I like these great questions you have afterwards, kind of like, I think as Niraju kind of said it, well, we kind of got our task now. I'm going to put together these items and shoot them off to you.
Okay, great.
Great. And we'll, in light of the semester coming soon, that we'll maybe by the end of next week, is that what you're looking at maybe, Georgette?
That's what I'm hoping for, yeah.
Okay.
So I can start off with the final week of classes for me with, you know, I already think of a couple students who would be willing to participate, so with different skill levels. So that'll be really interesting. Looking forward to it.
Okay.
Some of these chaos items might make good review items.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I hope so.
So,
all right,
I
you guys.
Guess we'll, okay. Everybody take care.
Okay.
And I guess we'll all talk when we have our giant meeting.
Yeah, have a great Thanksgiving break.
A wonderful
all
Thanksgiving.
Right.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Please stand.